Welcome to the Adventures in Arting podcast. This is episode 13, Arts in Worship, recorded on April 25th, 2013. My name is Julie Fafan Balzer, and with me is my co-host, Eileen Schubalzer. Hi, Mom.
Hi, Julie.
So you've had quite an adventure in Watertown this past week.
Yes, actually, and we're all recovering, and it's going to take a while. It's a kind of odd thing. Actually, I was at a meeting last night for something else, and the police chief was mentioning that we used to always tell people, oh, I live in Boston or outside Boston, but now we all say Watertown because everybody knows what we're talking about.
That's pretty exciting. I will say I saw some Instagrams from a friend of mine who lives in Brookline, who's just the next town over, and they were doing facials and having all sorts of fun while they were locked in their house trying to do stuff. And what did you do during all that time?
I was avoiding windows. I had this fantasy that, you know, he was out there. I will say this, my hat's off to people who live under these kinds of circumstances where they have to worry about their physical safety or their family's physical safety all the time. I don't know how you do that. The stress level is just so high. Friday night, I slept for 11 hours when it was over.
Well, I'll say, I think Thursday night, you didn't sleep a wink. You just sort of stared at your TV and, you know, curled up in your bedroom.
It's true. I couldn't stop watching. I kept, and I was on Twitter too. And, you know, I'm not a huge social media person.
Yes. Well, thank goodness everything turned out okay. And, well, not totally okay, obviously.
So but, now we can do a podcast.
So there you go. Now we can do a podcast. So great segue, Mom. So today our guest is a very good friend of mine, Kimberly Versteeg. And Kimberly is an actress. And she's on the board and worship team of her church, which is called Fort Washington Collegiate. And Kimberly and I met each other. We figured out probably we think it's 1999. Mm-hmm. But I'll let her tell you the story of how we met, Kimberly.
So thank you, Julie, and Eileen for having me today. Julie and I met in New York City. I was auditioning for a show, and she was directing the show. And it was something I had high interest in. And thankfully and smartly, she cast me. And that started our relationship, and we've done, I don't know, a lot of plays together at this point.
We did do a lot of plays together, though I've always felt a little offended. Kimberly told me that she didn't know that she was really a friend of mine until I asked her to be a bridesmaid, that was the first time she realized we were really friends, and I was like, oh no, I thought we were friends for years, but apparently she thought it was just a working relationship, and I was just nice to her because she was an actress.
She needed you to prove your love.
But besides, Kimberly has had a very long and fascinating acting career. So do you want to tell people a little bit about your acting path?
Sure. I have been acting since I was about in my 20s. I'm not going to tell you how old I am now, but in my 20s. And I worked in several different cities. I worked in LA and I worked in Minneapolis and went to graduate school, got my master's in acting from University of Iowa, and then came to New York City, which is where I wanted to explore my craft, and stayed in New York and worked for some time, and then started doing other interesting little things like directing and a little bit of writing. So I guess that's my general...
A long and storied career, I must say. No, I always said Kimberly was such a pleasure to work with as an actress because she has a really intellectual approach to all the work and always very thoughtful about why she's doing stuff and what she's doing and thinking. And I still remember that every rehearsal, you would have these questions at the end of the rehearsal, and I would, you know, I never answer a question with an answer. I always answer a question with a question. Mm-hmm. And so you would come the next day into rehearsal and you would say, I thought about what you said and here's what I'm thinking. And it was so nice because I felt like it was a really thoughtful process. You know what I mean? And that's just it's the kind of process I enjoy the most. And I actually sometimes feel like in my different kind of art life I have now as a visual artist as opposed to a theater artist or a theatrical artist, I feel like on my blog I have the same kind of play with people where they ask questions and I ask a question back, you know, because I think it's always more interesting when it's a discussion rather than like a dictated right and wrong or something like that. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
I think too with creativity, I think there's a strong balance between your impulses and your spontaneous self, and then the intellectual self, the part that really sits down and analyzes and says what's the best approach and what serves the story or what serves the piece of art or what serves what my goal is with whatever you're exploring.
That's always been also another interesting thing about you as an actress, which is you are always thinking about, like, what is, when we talk about, like, serving the piece, meaning it's not about, I want to look pretty, I want to come across well. It's a real team player kind of thing. And I think just as in sports, I read a quote by Mia Hamm randomly today that's now flashing through my head, and I'm going to butcher it, so I'm going to totally paraphrase it, but it's something about the idea about, she said she never cared about herself. It was always about that she was part of a team, and if the team won, then everybody won, but if she won, then nobody won, you know? And so I think in acting, it's hard to find people who are without ego in that sense, who are willing to sort of say what needs to make this work, you know what I mean, to make the whole show go together. So you're not always out there showboating, but you're thinking what's going to serve the piece and serve the whole story. Which actually, in a weird way, is kind of a nice segue into our major topic today.
It is, actually.
I know. It's not, that yeah, is an awesome yeah. accidental segue. But so what I really want to talk about, I mentioned earlier, obviously the title of this episode is Arts and Worship. And I mentioned that Kimberly is on the board and worship team of her church. And as long as I've known Kimberly, her faith has been really important to her, a huge priority. And you've always been very active in your church. And one of the things that I think is so unique and fascinating about your church is that you do worship through art. So will you tell us a little about that?
Yeah. So the neighborhood that we live in is in Upper Manhattan. It's in Washington Heights, where our church is located. And Washington Heights tends to have a lot of artists in the neighborhood because the rents are a little bit cheaper. And so you have all sorts of artists. You have dancers, you have visual artists, you have musicians, you have filmmakers, you have actors, you have everything you can think of up there. And those folks are the people that are in our congregation. And we had explored a little bit of putting arts into worship in very small ways, and got a lot of really great response. And our congregation was very clearly telling us that this was something that meant a lot to them and was a direction that they wanted us to move in. So what we did is we created a worship team, and it's a loose group of people. They're not all artists. Sometimes they're scientists. It's anybody in our congregation who has the desire to be in the group and is interesting and can input in a valuable way. So we have a lot of different people around our table. We try to make sure though that we have all our bases covered. So we make sure that we have a couple visual artists. We make sure we have a playwright. We make sure that we have an actor or two. So we really try to make sure that we have a little bit of everything that we need. And what we do is we sit down. So what we do is we intentionally put art into each of our services. And that's every week. So you're putting something together every week that
can
hopefully
has meaning.
Can you give
an example of what you mean when you say you put art into the service?
Sure. So the objective of putting art in the worship service is to illuminate the sermon, the main point of the sermon. So let's say the sermon that week is about,
I know, put you on the spot. It's always hard to think when you're right
on
the spot.
So I'll give you, I guess, an example. Okay. So typically what we do is we sit down and we read the scripture. Just like with a play, the words are everything. Everything is in the words. So you sit down, and we usually do three or four different versions of the Bible so we can really get a sense of how other people are interpreting these verses. And those verses are the structure
of the
sermon.
You know what that actually reminds me of is when you do a Shakespeare play and you have the first folio out and then you have some of the more updated editions and you sort of look at how editors have changed it versus what Shakespeare actually wrote, and you're thinking of all the different versions.
Absolutely. And each version may, you know, one version may not speak to you in a way that another one may really hit home with you. So usually we sit down and we read a couple different versions of it together, and then we just kind of start throwing out how maybe a particular passage that had meaning to you, or how it made you feel, or where you feel like maybe you fail in the scripture, or it can be anything. One week in particular, I remember we were talking about how we felt the focus of the scripture was really about coming clean with God, in the sense that that we all have failings, and that being able to bring our pieces of disappointment to God, the act of bringing it to God is a cleansing for us. So we were kind of talking about this idea that had been lifted from the scripture, and someone said, oh, so let's do this. Let's, instead of like, let's physically bring something to the altar, something physical. Then someone else said, well, what if it was like a piece of paper and we wrote our own personal, whatever that is that we're disappointed with. Maybe it's that we have envy, or maybe it's that we are, sometimes maybe we're a little selfish, whatever that is. We put it on the piece of paper and we fold it up and we bring it to the altar. Then someone else in our group who was a scientist said, oh, wait, there's this paper and this ink and you write on it and then you dip the paper in water and it disappears. And so
the ink disappears.
So that's what we did one week, is at the end of the sermon, in order to illuminate the idea of bringing to God your failings, we had each person in the pew write down something on a little piece of paper, and they brought it up to the altar. And then the surprise, of course, was when they dipped it in the water to cleanse their sin, so to speak, it disappeared. So, and that wonderful idea came from a scientist, not necessarily an artist in the group, but it's certainly always a collaborative idea. So we certainly try to balance each week what how we feel, what art form is going to best illuminate whatever that nugget is. Sometimes it's dance, sometimes it's draping the sanctuary in colors of fabric. Sometimes it's a mobile spinning of quotes of great leaders. Sometimes it's poetry. Sometimes it just really varies depending on the sermon and what's trying to be illuminated.
I will say there's a video on the homepage of the church that I watched, which I will say you made me watch, which the last time you were for dinner, we watched it. But it's from Easter service, mm-hmm. and it's dancers. And I know the guy who choreographed it, who's part of your worship team, used to dance for Alvin Ailey.
Yeah, he's actually one of the ministers at our church, yeah. and he also serves on the worship team. And he is a former dancer of Alvin Ailey, and he's got good connections into that. So we do have a lot of dance in our worship services. But from that also, we have a step team that our younger kids are in. Like preteen kids, we have a step team, and they do step in worship for us as well. We have rap. We have everything you could possibly think of in our worship services.
You know, that's very cool, and it makes me think of a couple things. In a cheesy way, it makes me think a little bit of Sister Act. Where I have to say, right, it's the whole idea of this failing church, but then they start taking current songs but turning it towards God, and it brings people into the church, and they start being able to relate it, because instead of feeling separate and other, it feels like it's more part of their lives. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And I think it also relates to me, though, if you think about the fact that theater actually came out of church.
The church, yeah.
It did. I mean, all those plays, all those things, they were ways of illustrating the Bible stories, of telling, I mean, even the ancient Greeks, all that theater, that was religious. That was based on their gods, you know, and I think it's so interesting. It's like putting the theater, even though sometimes it's visual art, sometimes it's singing, whatever it is, back into it. And I think for me, I feel like that there's a relatability there.
Well, in non-Christian religions also, there's a lot of theater and dance and music that circles around religious stories. I mean, look at India, you know, look at all these countries. So I think it's a natural thing if you are interested in the great themes of life, and many of them are from whatever religion you're in, that you would want to make it deeper and use more of the community resources. I think it's actually a very interesting idea. It used to be the image of arts in church was either that you had, you know, a guitar singer, a guitar guy singing. Mm-hmm. That's sort
and
of
a drummer. Yeah. Maybe if you're lucky, you had a drummer.
Or it's like a black church where everybody's singing gospel. But what I like is there's just sort of everything. The idea that there could be rap one week, there could be draping the place in fabric. I think the multiplicity of people who can find something for themselves and participate in some way is what really makes it. Because to me, the whole idea of bringing in all the arts is to make it more communal, to have more participation, not just more of you yourself participating, more of your senses and so on, but just people participating together. You're building the community of the church, which is part of the important thing behind religion is reaching out to other people, whatever your religion is.
You know, Eileen, I think one of the reasons why our church in particular landed with the arts as a communication piece for worship was that our congregation is incredibly diverse. We have probably 20 different countries represented in our congregation. We have South African, we have the islands, we have Taiwan, we have the Philippines, we have the African-American American experience. We have just so many different cultures at our church. And one of our strengths as a church has been our diversity, but it's also our Achilles heel, which is that everybody has their own cultural context and the way they worship and their context for that. And we were trying to find our own new way of doing things that, because a lot of times when you have different cultures, something that may be a blessing to somebody else may be not of God to someone else, or make someone else uncomfortable. So maybe someone has a very open and charismatic worship style, but that may run up against someone else in the congregation who has a very reserved worship style. So I think one of the reasons why we were driven toward arts is that we really felt like we were finding our own way to communicate as a full congregation, that we were creating our own language. So rather than using everybody's languages from all the different cultural backgrounds that they came from, we're kind of creating our own language within our own church.
You know, a lot of times you'll see in a church that they have the children, the Sunday school, doing all these arts things, but somehow it doesn't translate to the adults. So I think it's really fantastic that this is for all ages.
I agree. And I think that one of the things that what makes us unique is that we live in this neighborhood. We have all these professional artists living in our neighborhood. So if you have a professional screenwriter and you have a professional dancer and you have a professional musician, why would you not use those? I grew up in a church and there's nothing. I grew up in a church where arts was used in, when it was used badly and it was very schmaltzy. And the idea of putting on like a play in church was just like, oh, it was terrible because it had that very didactic sensibility of, okay, so this is the moral of the story and you shouldn't, you know, you should be nice to everybody kind of moralities. Uh-huh. And when we do drama, we don't necessarily even say we have the answer. Sometimes it's just posing the question. But it's a much more sophisticated message.
That, created, by the way, is just what we were talking about earlier when I was saying answering a question with a question. Mm-hmm. It's not always about being a dictator who says this is the answer, this is the truth, the one truth.
Well, I also think it's important because life is very complicated. And in those plays that you were describing, which are very simple, the problem is the choice is usually pretty obvious. And in real life, the choices are not always obvious.
They are never obvious. That's true.
But I think that's one of the wonderful things about art is there's so much space for interpretation.
There is.
Because sometimes I feel like you can read a piece of scripture and it feels a little bit like there's a very clear you know, way that you're meant to take it. But when I see a dance piece based on that, maybe I take away something different, something else in it mm-hmm. relates to me. There's a moment there, or I see a glimpse or a spot, a place of, you know, hope. And I also think, in some interesting ways, it also gets at that whole idea. I'm a big fan of Howard Gardner, who is the educator who came up with the whole idea of the seven different styles of learning, who says, you know, we don't all, read a book and learn that way. Some people have to, you know, make things to learn. Some
multiple people have to, intelligences.
Yes, multiple intelligences. And I do think that there is something for about not having your church experience be something where it's just spoken at you, but where it's interactive, where you're doing stuff, where you're feeling stuff, where you're seeing and hearing, you know what I mean? It becomes a whole different way of learning, of taking it in.
I agree. I think New York is a tough place to live. And I think,
oh my gosh, yes.
There's a lot of different stimulus out there. I mean, you can go see something different and new every day. And I think that folks that decide that they want to spend their Sunday morning going to church rather than sleeping in, rather than all the other different things that they could be doing.
Brunch.
There you go. Brunch. No, you just brunch afterward. But I think that I think that's a brave choice. I think to say I'm going to go to a church on a Sunday morning is a brave choice. And the last thing I want when I'm going to go on a Sunday is to be preached at. I want a nugget. I want something of value that I can take with me into my week that's going to make my week better, that's going to make me see my life in a new way, that's going to help me be more compassionate towards those that I may not normally be with.
The jerks who are bumping into you on the subway.
And I think that worship in the arts for us, or arts in worship for us, has really enhance the idea that there's something to take with you when you leave.
Well, also, I think in the idea that you can find God or wherever you want to call it, like anywhere at all. I mean, I know that you have confessed to me that there have been Sundays when instead of going to church, you'll go like on a hike with a friend. Mm-hmm. And you see that as worship through nature, mm-hmm. you know, and that you say that you can find God there just as well as sitting in church. Mm-hmm. But I think part of that is like as soon as you see the idea that, you know, yes, you can see God in dance, you can see God in visual art, you can see God in, like, I know your boyfriend's a filmmaker and I've seen some little films that he's done for your church mm-hmm. too, which are really cool, you know, as an art form too. But as soon as you see all that, then it's like, I can't imagine that he doesn't take that into his work as saying every time he's making something, he finds something in it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
That still works for him still. Every time then that painter paints a painting again, they are still finding it, even if it's not tied into a specific scripture. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that my experience of working with arts in worship has opened up the world in a new way to me. And opened up God in the world in a new way for me.
You know, I went to, there's a theater company out in Lenox, Massachusetts called Shakespeare and Company. And they run a very intensive summer program that I went to 1 year. And they used to talk about this idea, which I find fascinating. And it's called theater therapy theology. And basically the idea that those three things are so intrinsically linked that you can't get away from them. And, you know, we all know that, like, no offense to you as an actress or me as a director, you know, the cuckoos go into the theater.
They do.
Everybody there has a problem and they want to talk about it and deal with it and play act to get out of it and mm-hmm. whatever else it is. I mean, not a lot of normal, well-balanced people go into the theater. They just don't.
That's true.
And I say that with all the love of my heart. It's just, it's an absolute fact. So there's that, definitely, you're working stuff out, therapy. But I also think it's about people are looking for meaning, for something more. I mean, what do we do all day in rehearsal and all night when you're home is you're trying to think about, what do I want? What am I trying to get? What is the point of this? And, you know, the number one question that anybody asks you when you propose a play that you want to direct is they say, why this play? Why now? How is this play going to, why is it important now? How is doing Hedda Gabler at this moment in time going to make people see our times differently, going to make people see the role of women or family differently? You know what I mean? And I think because you're trying to constantly answer that and trying to, and or at least believe for the most part that theater is something that has to illuminate, just as you were saying, mm-hmm. I always said, I don't care if people loved my play or hated my play, but I do not want them to leave the theater indifferent. I need them to leave talking about it. That was stupid and I hated XYZ about it. Or, oh my God, I feel so differently about things. But it's that idea that I just love the idea that I can have touched or changed somebody through, you know, the work that I put on. And I do feel that way too as an artist now, you know. One of the things I love about blogging is sort of the immediacy of somebody saying, I saw your painting or the post that you did, and suddenly I felt like I could do it too. I've never felt creative. I took your class, and now I feel creative. I mean, for me, that's the most amazing thing is that you're touching somebody. It's not just that you're doing it for you, but you're reaching out there. And I feel like, again, it all comes back around, like, you know, theater, therapy, theology. But, mm-hmm. you know, there is that part of it, which for all three of those is about connecting. And it's about changing your world or the people around you.
One thing that I have found really interesting about being a part of this at my church is that when I was in the professional world as an actor, I always felt a great sense of pressure to be right, to do it the right way. And one thing that's different for me about doing it in church is It's for God. And God's the only person that's really going to say, I love it. I hate it. It made me cry. It was the best feel-good worship service of the year. And so for some reason, I'm able to let go as an artist when I'm performing in a worship setting in a way that I wasn't able to on stage. And I don't know exactly what that's about, but I think part of it is that part of it is the congregation, and I think part of it is that it's for God. It's not going to be reviewed in a paper. It's not, you know, it's just about that relationship with God. So you really pull all your judgment out of it, and you just kind of let it be what it is during the performance.
Interesting.
Well, even more than that, also, in the professional theater, there's so much competition. Between actors, you feel like you're practically competing with every other actor in the world. And I assume that this is a completely 180 degree different experience in that way.
It is. I think we do fail occasionally. Not, I don't think often, but I think, well, fail is not a right word. Sometimes I think we make other people, sometimes we'll make do something that may make someone uncomfortable. You still have those boundaries of, you still get feedback, and you still get, and you still realize maybe you have boundaries you need to maybe push away from, but you'd never know that until you've crossed the boundary. But with the congregation, you have a more forgiving audience than you would in a typical theater setting, partly because they're from your congregation. Most of them are from the congregation. So you already have a relationship with that person before you see them in the sanctuary. So it's mm-hmm. a little different.
I'm very interested in this idea of crossing boundaries, because I think that a lot of art, and I think a lot of really good, important art that has happened in America, both on stage, in museums, I mean, not just America, in the world, has been art that has pushed boundaries, that has mm-hmm. outraged people. That has, you know, made them upset. And I wonder if that isn't part of the purpose of art a little bit, to make you sometimes uncomfortable.
Yes, I think it is. And so that's where but I think that people in a congregation are more willing to be uncomfortable than people in a theater sometimes. And maybe it's because they have the relationship with the performer off, you know, outside of the performance. Mm-hmm. I think the community is tighter. So I think that there's more, and it's okay if someone says, wow, that kind of made me uncomfortable, that song, or whatever that was. I think it's good to know, but I think you also, it's not good if they're walking away every Sunday feeling uncomfortable. But I think once in a while, people are going to be uncomfortable, and I think that's okay. I think it pushes them to new places, and maybe helps them think about their life and the way they interact in their life in a new way.
You know, they say that you never change unless you're unhappy.
I never heard that.
Really?
No.
You never heard that? Uh-uh. Well, because the thing is, like, when you're happy, why would you make a change? Because you're perfectly happy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's only when you're deeply unhappy that things change. And I think my mother was the wise lady who told me that once when I was little, because she was like, you know, it's good that you're unhappy. It means, you know, something exciting is going to happen. You're going to change something. And I was like, whoa. So it's, I will say that almost every time I'm unhappy now, I'm like, hmm, it's up to me now.
I've done my job.
But yeah, that's the thing. Like, if I want to get unhappy, then I better walk my butt on out of the unhappiness by mm-hmm. making a change of some kind. And it's really true. Every time I've ever made a really large leap or change in my life, it's come out of unhappiness, you know? And so I'm not saying that unhappiness and discomfort are the same thing, but I do think that sometimes discomfort is motivated by the fact that you feel unhappy about something, so you're uncomfortable when somebody touches around it or mentions around mm-hmm. it. Do you know what I mean? So sometimes I feel like those are kind of good places to poke because it forces a change. I mean, I'll say, like, I think that's true of all personal things in life, like habits, lifestyle, whatever it is. But I also think it's true of, like, when I'm working on a painting, if I start to get sick of myself, well, watch out, because something about my style is going to have to change so that I can get happy about it, you know?
That's a very good point. I think I recall, actually, Julie, one point we had worked on a project. This was a theater project. And I remember coming to you at one point in time saying, as an actor, I was feeling really uncomfortable about a scene. And you saying back to me, well, maybe that's okay. You're feeling uncomfortable because maybe the character's uncomfortable. I was like, oh, that's a really good point. So, you know, we don't like to live in it, but it's there, and we do grow from it. So.
That's true, and I think sometimes being confronted with something uncomfortable, you know, in a church setting, whether it's about something about your beliefs or the way that something makes you feel about it, I mean, I one of the things that I really like, I mean, obviously I'm Jewish, you're a Christian, that's always been there, and you come to my Passover Seders every year, sing Dayenu as loud as anybody else. And the thing that is so interesting is that theoretically, right, the definition of a Jew is one who wrestles with God. And so one of the things that I've always but one of the things that I have always taken is this idea that part of being, for me, part of faith is about asking questions and always being not sure and not accepting that there is a word or a right and always feeling like there's more to learn, there's more in it, there's, you know what I mean, trying to find your own truth and your own way through it and wrestling with the whole idea. And so I feel like one of the things I love about this arts and worship concept is that I feel like that is a kind of wrestling with God. It is a kind of way of saying, I'm trying to get a handle on this scripture or this lesson, and this is the way that I'm interpreting it, and I'm pulling it out there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's the same with, if that makes somebody uncomfortable, that kind of grappling, you know what I mean? Then that's a really interesting place to start a conversation. I guess I'll say, so one of the things so Mom, I have to tell you, Kimberly and I had dinner before we recorded this podcast, and we talked about you. Uh-oh. And one of the things is we were talking about you holed up in Watertown, you know, in your house scared. And Kimberly said, you know what? I bet if that guy had come to her house, your mother would have basically made him feel guilty and made him cry. And and the thing is, I've always said this. I always warn friends. I say, if you come over to my mom's house and you spend the night, you're going to cry. And they're always like, why? Is your mother mean? And I'm like, no. The problem is she's the nicest person on earth. And she starts asking you questions. And she just gets to the heart of whatever it is that hurts you or is upsetting you.
Or puts you in the uncomfortable.
place. Like, I don't know. You have laser precision, Mom. Like a doctor. It's like, boom, you're in there. And so, but I think, like, that's such the thing about when something really affects you in a worship sitting, you know, or in an arts setting, whatever it is, I feel like it's because it does that needling. It hits you right in that spot where you needed to hear it. And so I think we all have a defense mechanism, but then, you know, you loop back around to it after time and you say, okay, this is something that I really need to think about. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that the folks that come to our church, they're not really looking for the answers. They're looking for companions for the journey.
Right. That's a great way of thinking about it.
Well, the thing the thing about the metaphor of wrestling just is so interesting, because for every move, there's a counter move in wrestling. So unless one side is overpowering, you never get to the end of it. It's very intimate, and for every push, there's a pull. So the struggle itself is what is so much the point of it. And I think that's what you're saying here, both about art and about the using the art in a worship setting. And Julie, I know that when you work on your art, you're as interested in the process as you are in the result.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, it's so funny because I've been using this quote over and over and over this week in my art. This is totally random that this conversation has come up, but I've been using this. I found it on Pinterest, and I cannot stop using it. The struggle is part of the story. In fact, if you look over there,
I did see it earlier.
Yeah, it's written right on the front of my art journal. And it's just been in my head so much. But, you know, when we were working in the theater, I used to all the time talk about how the process was so important. And when I would write grants for the theater company, I would always be interested in talking about what our process was and how it was different. And a huge part of the theater company that I ran for years, the Milk Can Theater Company, was really about the process of making new plays happen. And that was a really important thing to me. And I know that on my blog, for instance, right now, I share a ton of process photos of like a canvas from start to finish, how it got to where it is, or talk about that because I think that's as important as the finished product. I mean, people will often say to me, I like the canvas before you did XYZ.
Thanks.
That is, of course, the danger of showing the process, but it's also the good thing because then I learn and I think maybe I liked it better there too and I should have stopped, you know? But I think the thing that I have found interesting for years is hearing you talk about when you get really excited about something that happens in your worship meeting and you're like, oh my God, there's this super cool idea and this is going to happen, or, oh, this was a great service, or, you know, because I think one of the reasons, and I'm just going to put words right into your mouth, one of the reasons that I think you're so active in your church and like doing, not just going to the services, but being part of the worship team is because you like process.
I do. And I like, and for me, I really enjoy the collaboration piece that is a part of theater specifically. And I have that collaboration piece being a part of my worship team. Even if I'm not performing that week, which is great if I'm not performing that week, I'm part of that process that came to whatever that was that happened on stage or happened on in front of the pulpit, happened in the worship space. And I love that collaboration.
I will also say that I think process makes you learn differently. So, for instance, I will say it doesn't matter how much work I did before I started directing a play. From the day that I stepped into the rehearsal room, that's where the real learning started for me. Because it doesn't matter how much I'm pushing pennies around on a piece of paper or doing my historical research or, you know, pulling every photo from the New York Library of every production that ever existed of this play, it's like it's not until you're actually moving it in 3D. And I feel like the same thing is true. I imagine that the lessons from the scripture that you now have such a different grasp, having worked it through as painting, as singing, as dance, as theater, as film, as rap, as step, as whatever. Do you know what I mean? You have a different grasp of it now from having worked through that process with it.
I think art is very collaborative. Even if it's you're doing fine art and you're alone when you do it, you're still influenced by what you saw online, what somebody's video that you saw that showed how to do a process a different way. You're always influenced and affected by those other sources. So even if we look at art forms that tend to be more solo acts, they're really not. They are, but they're really not, because they're completely influenced by everything around them to begin with. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and it totally makes me think of the fact that, you know how they say, like, your first play is always basically about your life. Like, you just have to spit it out. You know, it's a thinly veiled version of your life. Mm-hmm. And, like, so very often I think that they say, you know, sculptors or painters, like, there's always a bit of them in everything that they paint. Everybody sort of has their nose, their bent, their perspective. And I think it's interesting to think about, you know, you and me and 25 people could read the same piece of scripture and each come up with a different...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's the exciting part for me. One of my favorite things about being in theater is doing play analysis. That's a piece I really enjoy. And I was surprised because when we started doing it, we didn't have a process. We had to create the process. Our senior minister was an appreciator of art. He'd never been active in any kind of an art form at all, probably other than just singing hymns in a church. So we had to figure out what that process was together. And I think because there were a couple people in the group that had this very strong theater background, I think that's, we looked at it more of analyzing how we would analyze a play. Mm-hmm. If we were an actor opening up those pages for the first time and saying, okay, everything's in the words, but everything is in the words. So
it's interesting, you know, in Judaism, there's this thing called Midrash where you take some of the scripture, the text essentially, and you sort of make up a story out of it. Do you know what I mean? And it becomes like these fictions that sort of are companions, and like very famous, you know, rabbis and all sorts of stuff have written these sort of companion stories that go with.
You still gave me an idea for a worship service.
There you go. Interfaith.
That's a very interesting
but
idea.
But it reminded me, whenever I did it, very much of play analysis. And even, I'll tell you, I've taken some art history classes too, and it's actually the same thing. You stare at the painting, and you have to talk about how does it make you feel? What are you thinking about? What do you think, like, given the time period that it was in, you know what I mean? What do you think the meaning was of it? And you just sort of go on and on and on through the whole thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's, again, it comes back to everything's so interrelated, is that therapy, theater, theology thing. Back again we go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so we're just about out of time. Can you believe how fast it went? Amazing. Mom, did you have any last words of wisdom you wanted to chuck in here?
No, but I think there may be a reason, for example, that you're interested in certain kinds of art and not in others. Like, for example, you like art with people in it, because I think you are always thinking about what the person in the art, what is motivating them, what forces are acting on them. Whereas other people, for example, love landscapes where there isn't a person to be seen. I just think there's a lot of the choice of what kind of art appeals to you. And I'm not just talking about visual art. That's really what kinds of questions you're wrestling with in your personal life. So I must say, I think Kimberly should give the website address for this church, because I'll bet a lot of people would like to learn more about it.
Well, our web address for our church is fortwashingtonchurch.org. And that's just our church website. There are a couple samples of what we do in worship, to at least to give you a taste and maybe inspire you if this is an area that has interest for you.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll embed at least one of them into the post with the podcast so people can see it, and then they can obviously go to fortwashingtonchurch.org to see other stuff. Is there anything that you want to add to the conversation?
No, I'm good.
fully satisfied customer. That's what I like.
I'm
glad we got a chance to talk about this, you know, because I think it's fascinating, and it's such an important part of who you are. I mean, it really is. It's a huge part of who you are, and you're such a good friend of mine, and I feel like I'm glad to tell the world about this amazing, cool thing that you do.
Thank you, and I'm happy to share this amazing, cool thing that my church does.
Well, I have to tell you, Kimberly was so nervous about this whole podcast. I don't know. Can I do this? What is this? It's going to be terrible. And I was like, are you kidding me? It's going to be awesome because you're talking about something you're passionate about. You know, how can it not be fascinating?
And then people will write comments, Kimberly, and they'll be like little reviews.
No reviews.
Don't tell her about reviews, Mom. Shh, don't say that. Okay. So we're going to wrap it up here. And thank you so much, Kimberly. And thank you so much, Mom.
You're welcome.
I'm glad you're safe and sound. Never been so Watertown proud in my life. And as always, you can find me on my blog at balzerdesigns.typepad.com. And do leave us your comments or questions at balzerdesigns.com/arting. That's ARTING. And we would love to hear from you. Comments are our favorites. Little reviews for Kimberly so she knows how she did, okay? And if you tweet about the show, please use the hashtag #poundarting. So thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you the next time on the Adventures in Arting podcast.